the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Gregory Stockel and Brian Lynn. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, scientists in California report the first appearance of a species of bright green algae, Caulerpa prolifera, growing in the ocean near California. And the researchers say they hope to never see it again. The growth of Caulerpa prolifera was found close to the coast off the Southern California town of Newport Beach. Divers recently began to remove the algae, as it could greatly harm the area's environment. Few fish or other animals eat Caulerpa prolifera, so it spreads effectively. It can quickly take control of an ecosystem, forcing out other plants as well as the animals that eat them. So far, the growth covers about 90 square meters. However, tiny pieces of the algae can easily break off and continue to grow elsewhere. Robert Mooney is a biologist with Marine Taxonomic Services. He led a team of three divers at the site. He told the Associated Press that the team has a chance to fully remove the plant, but no time can be wasted. "We don't have the luxury of waiting to see what happens," he said. The species was discovered late last year. Federal, state, and local officials were urged to act earlier this year to prevent the algae from spreading. "It was important to act quickly," they said, "because the movement of swimmers and boaters in the sea help spread the algae." California faced a similar problem 2 years ago. A related algae was found off the coast of Huntington Beach and Carlsbad. It cost $7 million to remove. California then banned the sale of that algae and others. Caulerpa prolifera is used in some aquariums and is not banned in California. When people clean aquariums, the resulting wastewater can include extremely small pieces of the algae. These pieces will travel along waterways into the Pacific Ocean and begin to reproduce. The source of Newport Beach's algae invasion is not confirmed, but Keith Merkel, a biological consultant on the project, has a suspicion. "It's more than likely the source is an aquarium release," he said. So far, divers have not discovered the algae anywhere else in the area. But Merkel said testing will continue, and if more algae is found, another removal operation will begin. "There's a good chance that it has spread. We just don't know where, which is the biggest fear that we have," Merkel said.
Many people who exercise need good music to get themselves through their workout. But in South Korea, their choice of music had been reduced under new COVID-19 rules. The country has increased social distancing and travel restrictions to halt the spread of the coronavirus. Now, South Korea has added a requirement that gyms must not play music that is too fast. The government set a limit of 120 beats per minute. Gyms will not be able to play faster music during group exercises. Health officials say the measure is meant to prevent breathing too quickly or getting sweat on other people. They wanted to avoid having to close businesses completely, as they have done earlier during the coronavirus health crisis. Opposition lawmakers, who called it nonsense, have made fun of the rule. Gym owners see the rules as ineffective or unrealistic. Kang Hyun-ku is an owner of a gym in northern Seoul. He listens to fast K-pop songs each morning. Kang told Reuters that playing happy songs is to cheer up our members and the overall mood. He added that his biggest question is if playing slower music has been proven to have any effect on the spread of the virus. He questioned how it will be possible to control the music people listen to when they wear personal listening devices like earphones. The Korean government enacted its highest level of social distancing rules in Seoul and neighboring areas on Monday. The country is currently battling its most severe COVID-19 outbreak. The new rules also limit running on gym equipment to no faster than 6 kilometers an hour. They ban the use of showers at gyms, and they restrict the popular sport table tennis to 2 people on a table, among other measures. Kim Young-tae is a member of the main opposition People Power Party. He added, "So you don't get COVID-19 if you walk slower than 6 kilometers per hour?" Kim added, "And who on earth checks the BPM of the songs when you work out? I don't understand what COVID-19 has to do with my choice of music." A health official said the government came up with the new rules after considering many different options. President Moon Jae-in on Monday said he was saddened when thinking of small and middle-sized business owners and others who feel the weight of the rules. "I can't help but feel very sorry to once again ask the citizens for a bit more patience," he said at a special COVID-19 policy meeting. I'm Gregory Stockel.
A new study predicts that a changing moon cycle will increase high tide flooding across U.S. coastal areas in the mid-2030s. The finding is based on ocean tide data collected from 89 coastal areas covering every U.S. state and territory except for Alaska. This data was examined along with flooding records and predictions for future sea level rise stretching into the year 2080. Research results showed that the combined effects of rising sea levels linked to climate change and natural changes in ocean tides will lead to increases in coastal flooding. The prediction was recently reported in a study in Nature Climate Change. The study was led by members of the U.S. Space Agency NASA's Sea Level Change Team. The lead researcher of the study was Phil Thompson, a member of the Sea Level Change Team and director of the University of Hawaii's Sea Level Center. Thompson said in a statement he expects the biggest increases to happen along the U.S. Pacific and Gulf of Mexico coastlines, which include Hawaii and other Pacific islands. This is important because this is where high tide flooding goes from being mostly a local or regional issue and becomes a national issue affecting a majority of our nation's coastlines, he said. The researchers note that many U.S. coastal areas, especially along the Atlantic coast, are already experiencing such flooding. High tide flooding happens when tides reach anywhere from 0.5 meters to 0.6 meters above the daily average high tide, says the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA reported more than 600 incidents of this kind of flooding, also known as sunny day flooding, in 2019. Such activity is expected to worsen and lead to longer-lasting floods as high tides increase in the future and sea levels keep rising. Ben Hamlington was a co-writer of the study. He is with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California and also the leader of the Sea Level Change Team. He said in a statement, the findings can be an important resource for U.S. coastal planners who may be centered more on preparing for extreme events rather than more high tide flooding. For planning purposes, it's important to know when we'll see an increase, Hamlington said. Thompson agrees that results of the study can be used by scientists, engineers, and government officials who are used to preparing for rare, severe weather events, such as a 100-year storm. But we demonstrate that it is important to plan for extreme months or seasons during which the number of flooding episodes, rather than the magnitude, is exceptional, he said. The prediction of increased high tides starting in the mid-2030s is linked to a normal moon cycle. NASA says the cycle, which affects how Earth lines up with the Moon and the Sun, changes our planet's gravitational pull. This, in turn, affects ocean tides. The cycle causes a regular wobble in the Moon's orbit that takes 18.6 years to complete, NASA explains. In half of the Moon's cycle, it causes high tides on Earth to be lower than normal and low tides to be higher than normal. In the other half of the cycle, high tides get higher and low tides get lower. Currently, NASA says the Moon is in the cycle that intensifies high tides. And while there have been issues with high tide flooding, there has not been enough sea level rise to cause high tides to regularly top flooding levels, the researcher said. But the next time the cycle comes around again, in the mid-2030s, sea level rise will have been at work during those years, NASA noted. The higher seas, combined with the new moon cycle, will cause a leap in flood numbers on almost all U.S. mainline coastlines, Hawaii, and Guam. Such flooding could leave people in cities dealing with floods every day or two, the research team predicts. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Jefferson Clinton, better known as Bill Clinton. Clinton took office in 1993 and was re-elected in 1996. In many ways, historians consider his time in office a success. The economy expanded, and the country was largely at peace. But Clinton had some notable failures, too. He could not persuade Congress to accept a plan to reform the nation's health care system. And, in his second term, the House of Representatives took steps to remove him from office. But the Senate decided not to act. Clinton finished his second term with high approval ratings. Yet, he is also remembered for being only the second U.S. president to be impeached. Bill Clinton came from a town with a memorable name, Hope. He grew up there and in another nearby town in the southern state of Arkansas. For most of his early life, Bill was raised by his grandmother and his mother, both nurses. His father had died in a car accident before he was born. People who knew Bill as a young man remember him as very intelligent, charming with people, and talented in music. His mother told him he would be president one day. Sure enough, Clinton pursued activities that would lead to a political career. He attended college at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., where he studied international affairs, led student government groups, and took a position as a clerk in the U.S. Senate. He went on to study at Oxford University in England on a prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. Then he graduated from law school at Yale University. There, he met another student who would be his wife, Hillary Rodham. The two went on to have one child together, a daughter named Chelsea. After finishing his studies, Clinton returned to his home state of Arkansas and pursued political office. At 32, he became one of the youngest governors ever in the country. 2 years later, he was voted out of office and, as historian Russell Riley notes, he became the youngest former governor. And that is how a good deal of Clinton's political career continued, in a pattern of successes and failures. His successes often came as a result of his centrist policies, which appealed to people of different political beliefs. He also was an effective public speaker and, to many, a likable, charismatic person who seemed to care deeply about others. But, his critics pointed out, Clinton also appeared to make many decisions simply for political advantage. And he sometimes tried to please so many people that he pleased no one. Following a series of increasingly national roles, as well as a series of setbacks, Clinton campaigned for president in 1992. At first, he did not do well in the campaign. He was young and not well known. He also suffered from reports that he had relationships with women who were not his wife. But in time, Clinton began winning primary contests. Reporters called him the comeback kid. He earned a public image as a politician who could survive problems. In the general election, Clinton competed against the sitting president, Republican George H.W. Bush. The two men also faced an unusually strong third-party candidate named Ross Perot. On election night, Clinton prevailed. Because Americans had split their votes among three major candidates, Clinton earned less than 50% of the popular vote. But he won enough electoral votes to become the next U.S. president. The people who worked on Bill Clinton's presidential campaign adopted an informal motto. They said, "It's the economy, stupid." In other words, campaign officials believed that most Americans cared primarily about how a president's policies would affect their financial concerns. So President Clinton quickly set about making a series of economic changes. They included raising taxes on wealthier Americans and cutting spending to help poorer Americans. In a few years, the U.S. budget deficit was gone, the federal government had a surplus, and the country's financial situation was strong and healthy, although not everyone approved of the steps Clinton took to get there or believed he should get all the credit. Early in his first term, Clinton sought an additional reform he believed would help voters' financial concerns: affordable health insurance for all Americans. Most people in the U.S. either bought private health insurance or did not have any insurance to help pay for medical costs. Clinton wanted to find a way for the U.S. government to support Americans' health-related expenses. He appointed his wife, First Lady Hillary Clinton, to lead a health care reform effort. Hillary Clinton, a lawyer, had led a similar effort to reform education in Arkansas when her husband was governor there. But some lawmakers in Congress, as well as some voters, rejected her efforts. The reform effort failed. Clinton also struggled in some early foreign policy moves. He withdrew American troops from Somalia after their humanitarian efforts there turned into a bloody military struggle. He was also criticized for failing to intervene quickly in the genocide in Rwanda, where hundreds of thousands of people were killed. Later, Clinton won praise for some of his foreign policy. His government helped restore the elected president in Haiti after a coup. It also helped negotiate peace agreements in Bosnia and Ireland. And it cooperated with NATO to intervene in the Kosovo area and stop attacks on Albanians there. In general, Clinton believed the U.S. had an important role to play in maintaining peace and protecting human life around the world. At the same time, he did not want to use too many American resources to do so. He aimed to cooperate with other nations and to set moderate goals. As usual, Clinton adopted an approach that was not too extreme on one side or another. During
During most of his time as president, Clinton had been under investigation. Federal judges had appointed a special counsel named Kenneth Starr to find out if the president had committed any crimes related to financial investments before he took office. During the investigation, Starr learned that the president had been having a sexual relationship with a young woman who worked in the White House. Starr asked Clinton about the affair under oath. Later, Starr accused Clinton of lying about his relationship with the woman. Starr said that Clinton had also tried to prevent others from telling the truth about some of his activities. In time, the president publicly admitted the relationship, and he apologized to voters and his family. But he said he had not lied or told anyone else to lie for him. Lawmakers in the House of Representatives did not accept Clinton's defense. They advanced two articles of impeachment. Lawmakers in the U.S. Senate then considered the case. It is their job to examine the evidence and decide whether to remove a president from office. A majority did not believe the actions Clinton was accused of were serious violations against the country. They voted to acquit Clinton of the charges and permit him to continue as president. In the U.S., a president can serve only two full terms. After his second, Bill Clinton and his wife settled in a town outside New York City. In time, Hillary Clinton became the U.S. Senator from New York, as well as a Secretary of State and the Democratic Party's candidate for president. Bill Clinton, like many other U.S. presidents, wrote about his experiences and helped develop his presidential library. He also worked on humanitarian, health, and economic issues with his family's organization, the Clinton Foundation. For many, Clinton's time in office is remembered as a mixed experience. The economy was at one of its strongest in U.S. history. Most people could find jobs, and many Americans bought homes for the first time. In the mid-1990s especially, the Internet and other new developments created a technology boom. In addition, Clinton was an effective public speaker, and he inspired new groups of people to support his Democratic Party. Many voters approved of his appointments of women and minorities to positions of power in his government. They also liked the steps he took to reduce the use of handguns, protect the environment, and provide paid time off work for some people to care for themselves or their families. But both Democrats and Republicans found fault with some of Clinton's efforts. And even his supporters note that the president had to spend much of his time in office answering charges of wrongdoing. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.